Hello, welcome to This Week in Quality. I am Judy Mosley, and actually I need to fix that because it is actually H-T-T-W-I-Q-D, and that means Hot Take This Week in Quality Day, and now my brain is broken, so Claire, would you like to introduce yourself?
Too many letters.
Oh, good. Too many letters.
Yes, hello, welcome. Claire Norman here. It's been a while since since I've hosted one of these podcasts, but we're back. The dynamic duo, Judy and Claire, are here to discuss all of your hot and spicy takes.
Yes. Yep, this is a ministry of testing event. So please, while we are doing hot takes, please don't do anything you regret. This will be out into the world. Thank you to those that are in the audience. Love to see the chat. And for those that will be listening later, thank you for joining us. We are here. It's hot. It's hot in the UK. We did a little temperature comparison, and even though it may not get as hot as Kentucky does or Arizona or especially Florida, don't go to Florida. It's so hot. That place is never cold. It's still hot for you. And so, yeah, there is that strange, phenomenon where when people get too hot, they get a bit, I won't say angry, maybe futzy. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about our hot takes today. So yeah, how has your week in quality been, Claire?
It's been great. Thank you. Yeah. We workshopped a lot yesterday in the heat, which was, with Jesse, we needed to think cool thoughts at that point. Luckily, it was remote, so I was just saying to Judy and Simon that I could have, you know, 5 fans directed at my face and not be judged for it. But a marvelous, marvelous day. So that was great. And yeah, like you say, Judy, it's all relative, isn't it? It's a relatively hot temperature for us here in the UK. But for everybody else in the world, everyone's laughing at us. We just don't have the infrastructure for it, right? Because why would we? It gets that hot for about a week a year, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one, I do have a question. When you say workshop, what does that mean can you provide some context for that?
Absolutely. So a workshop is everything that a meeting is not.
Okay.
So it's... You don't sit there and listen. You take part. You're there to have conversations with your colleagues. And although meetings and workshops still have a purpose, they still have a goal. The way that you get there within a workshop is quite sort of not dictated, I suppose. You know, it's quite kind of free and easy. It depends on the conversations that you're pulling out of people at a different time. So, both structured, I think, but in very different ways.
Excellent. That sounds lovely. I think I need more workshops versus meeting in my life. I actually like the fact that you pointed out that how important infrastructure is. Mm-hmm. Because where we are, and we have air conditioners in Kentucky, I would say there's a certain level, there's different states that would have air conditioners and some that don't, because in Colorado, it is more cooler. So they are a few hours from us. And, you know, so when they complain about the heat, it's the same idea where it's like, if you don't have anything to combat that, I'm actually thinking in terms of testing, where it's like, heat isn't normal for you, so why would you have air conditioning? But yeah, I don't know. I'm still drinking my coffee, so I'm
yes.
My brain's still figuring out life, but yeah, we do have some hot takes. So we can jump on into those if you'd ready.
Yes, awesome. Let's do it.
Okay.
But was there anything from your week, Judy, that you'd like to chat about?
Oh, yes. Well, from my week, I really enjoyed, let's see. Testing wise, we're working on, and I'm really glad I have my coffee in my hand because I always struggle with this word, yeah, it's really bad. I'm just going to say it like I see it in my brain and then y'all can laugh at me. Parallelization. But running our test suites, not just one straight through, you know, but broken up. And so I'm testing that and making sure that we can reduce our runtime. It's going to cut it in half, basically, which will be amazing. But making sure that the tests don't cross over, that the tests aren't flaky, that it's not going to block anything unnecessarily. It's quite the task. So as long as I don't have to say the actual word, I can do the word. But
it's a mouthful. It's a tongue twister.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. But other than that, I did some writing, and that is going to be one of the hot takes today, where it's like, we're going to need boundaries, I think, with technology as it continues to change. And I'm going all in and embracing the 90s. And I say, let's just put the internet back in the living room. Like, let's set up the old computer. Let's add the login sound back. And if we could get the AOL, like you've got mail, I think would be good. But yeah. So, but that's me. And just.
Could you imagine if we still had that chime now though? Like, I think I get about 500 emails a day. It'd never shut up.
Oh, I know.
Well, you've got more mail. You haven't opened your mail. You've got more mail. Come on.
Don't leave. Which we don't. We don't leave. But yeah, this may be a little hot take. I turn all my notifications off.
Mm.
Like, I don't get email notifications. I turn Slack notifications off because it's just so, it breaks my brain. And I call it notification, not aware, sensitive. Mm. Where it's just like, I see the red dot. Even if I'm working on something, I'm not able to completely block the awareness of the red dot on an application. So what about you?
Yeah. Alexander in the chat saying notification overflow. And yeah. Louise says the red dot must die. It's true. I suffer the same thing. It's so difficult. And I think there's neuroscience, there's brain science behind that as well, right? Because when we context switch, That is really costly for our brains. It takes so much longer for us to get back to the task that we actually wanted to do. So I think it's a really good idea to just say, no, you don't talk to me right now. I'm focusing on this thing only.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've worked at companies where they said, if you need to focus, just put an emoji and put your status as you're focusing and just set the expectation that it's going to be a while until you answer back. And I really love that. Cause you knew what someone was doing, and you know, I would send messages to people and I just say, hey, this is not a fire. So read this later.
Yeah.
And then if they message right away, I was like, no, what, it wasn't a fire. And they're like, no, I'm ready to answer you. And I'm like, oh, okay.
This person is notification sensitive as well. Noted for next time.
Exactly, exactly. just schedule messages.
People. Yeah, yeah.
Schedule the message. Oh. But yeah, what about you? Is there a hot take you've been simmering on this week?
So we, in our team, we have been experimenting with these lightning learning sessions. Now, at the company that I'm working for at the moment, the co-op, we get a certain amount of time to do our own personal development, our own learning. I think that's a fairly common thing across the industry because technology obviously moves so fast. We need that time to be able to go and learn what's happening, bring that stuff back to our jobs. So as part of that, a couple of developers on my team set up a lightning learning session every couple of weeks on a Wednesday afternoon where we can share what we've been learning. And we've called it lightning learning because we want it to be super quick, right? So we want to just encourage people to say that done is better than perfect. Mm. Now, it's not really a hot take, but every time somebody reminds me of it, I think, yeah, that's true. And I think it's something that we're really quick to forget, actually. So we need to be constantly reminded of that. And the reason that that's come to mind this week is because we had a speaker lined up on Wednesday who unfortunately was off sick. So within 2 hours, we had another developer step in and say, I've got something I can chat about. There's no kind of formal presentation around it, but it's something I've been working on for a while. So I'll just come and talk about it. Mm. And he's shared this side project that he's been working on. He's shared some resources that he's been looking at. Yes, Al, I see that. Don't let perfection be the enemy of progress. That's another great quote on the same lines. So not really a hot take, but we need to be reminded of that more often than we feel we should, I think.
Yes. Yeah, because it seems like we can just get so caught up in everything being even good. Like, sometimes good is even... I'm trying to remember the conversation that it was. I think it was with Jesse Berkeley. Simon, you can remind me in the chat possibly, but we were on a call and he was sharing a story and he was talking about how he said, don't despise the days of small beginnings where mm-hmm. it's just like, you're just starting and you may feel very confident about what you're doing. You can still like, really mess it up and that's okay. Like you're learning. And so I like the idea of lightning learning and doing it in public. I think because doing it in public is so hard, mm-hmm. you know, because of course even if you're well polished and you have everything together, like pick any demo out in public and you know, it's going to go wrong. So yep. when you're hardly prepared and I don't know, maybe you can give that disclaimer. Like this may not even be good, but this is what I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. It's tough because we feel vulnerable, don't we? We feel like we need to present a more polished version of ourselves, but that's not always possible or indeed necessary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Alexander has a hot take in the chat. He says, if you don't fully understand the thing you want to test. Oh, wait, hold on. Let me start over. If you don't fully understand the thing you want to test and measure, you might get the results that are surprising, but yet mysterious. So first understand how things work, then try to measure it.
I am intrigued by that. Alexander, we would love you to come on stage and chat with us about that if you're feeling up for it.
Yes. Yes. And the join the stage queue button is available. So if anyone wants to hop on. But yeah, I love that. I feel like I do tend to kind of jump in first and just measure it without really understanding. It's like, and well, you know, because a lot of times we might be asked, like, hey, test this thing, and we don't have anything to rely on. And so then you're not even sure, like, you know, what's good? Like, what is the definition of good with this project? And yeah, oh, good. Alexander's here. We're ready. We're ready for your hot take.
Yes. Tell us, Alexander, what's prompted the chat?
Hello, hello. Can you hear me well?
We can.
Good. Hello, everybody. Hello, Judy. Hello, Claire. It is very nice to hear you this Friday and to talk about some hot takes, or not so hot, but yet interesting takes. Regarding the thing that I mentioned is that this week I discovered that the things, or let's say, the things that the tool can measure out of the box, it is good, but you need to understand how things are working in order to produce reliable results. Let me elaborate a little bit on it. So I need to test an API. I need to run performance tests for an API, but it's not just an HTTP API, but it's GraphQL over HTTP. And for performance reasons, or for performance as a performance tool, I used K6, one of the tools available on the market. And the thing, or the tricky thing, is that the metrics that this tool produces for HTTP API is pretty much well defined. But the thing is that it works if you just use regular HTTP API. But if you are using GraphQL API, it adds an additional layer on that you need to measure, because in terms of like technology, you can get HTTP 200 response, which is okay. But from the GraphQL point of view, you can get an error, and it will be a valuable, or like a correct result. So you need to prepare your scripts and measurements and metrics to add additional metrics to catch these kind of errors. So the main idea here is you need to understand how things works, or how things may that you are testing may interact with the regular tools. And maybe you need to extend those tools. That's it.
That's so good. That reminds me a little bit of just some running tests this week. And with Cypress, I was running into the issue where tests were failing whenever I was running it headless. Like it was passing while I was viewing the dashboard, but not whenever it was running headless. And so I had to, I don't know, I kind of feel like they're dirty tricks, but it's just that that idea of adding a weight just to see like what could result, like what is it, what is Cypress, is it the test, is it, it's not the code because it's passing in the dashboard, but it's like, I don't know, my words are tripping up a little bit, but basically learning how to use the system that's testing the system is what I'm hearing you say, Alexander. Would that be a correct or a decent reflection?
I think yes. So when we are using any kind of tool for any kind of testing, automation or something, we need to first understand the system we are testing. Then the next thing, we need to understand that the tool that we are using, it introduces their own potential flakiness, potential little weirdy things. Mm-hmm. Also, I think some time ago I also like wrote a post somewhere that UI end-to-end tests are the most complex one, just because we are on the UI level, we are introducing more and more layers. So mm-hmm. the one layer is our tool that is using that we are using. The second layer is application. Then the browser, which actually itself can add additional complications, and then the operating system. So the more layers we have, the more sources of problems or issues we can have. I'm not even talking about mobile world, because on the mobile world, it can be even worse in some cases. I mean, like more different parts. So in that case, to investigate such problems or to be aware of such problems, we need to understand that, hey, we are using a browser. Can the browser be a source of these weird things? Or maybe the applications. But the application itself can also be a source, because application is not, in most cases, it's not monolithic something like a big pile of code that works somewhere on a big dusty server. It can be like combination of different services, and those services can work in a different manner. So some things can work fast, some things can work slow, and in the end, it can impact the test results and the experience of the users. So the more we know about the things or the system on the test, the better.
That's awesome. As you were talking there, Alexander, about, you know, all of these different layers that we're introducing, you know, the higher we get up in our tests, I was suddenly cast back to a science lesson in school. So I'm maybe like 12 years old, right? I'm sitting at a sitting in a lab, and we are testing, I don't know, let me think. Oh, I know. We're talking about osmosis, right? So this is the process of something taking in whatever water is kind of sitting around it, right? And we're trying to test how much water is going to be absorbed by a potato. And part of the lesson is about isolating the variables that you're testing, right? So as you were talking there about, you know, the application or the browser or the tool itself that you're using to test, we have to still think like scientists as testers, right? We have to be able to isolate those variables, because if we can't, then we don't know which of those is causing the problem. So there's my hot take. Don't forget your school science lessons, people. Comes in useful.
Potatoes are valuable. Go ahead.
Yes. Actually, I wanted to just add, so I'm completely agree that we as testers, we are conducting experiments. And to conduct an experiment, we need, like if you are talking science, we need to have a set of independent variables and dependent variables. So, and we need to, let's say, assume what we are experiment on. And for example, we are testing this particular variable and how this variable can be dependent on other things. So for example, how the speed of loading site can depend on the internet connection. And then we can explore on these things. And the main idea here in experimentation that we always need to remember is that if you are experimenting on something, we may get a negative result. A negative result, it's also a result. So we proved that something is not working, which is good.
Absolutely.
I love that. Preeti in the chat says, 101, I shouldn't be reading these. I'm not awake enough. 100% agree with you, Alexander. The more layers for an application, the more complicated system. And mobile world is much more complex as compared to web. Simon put in the chat that talking layers, Deb Sherwood recently talked about a new layer at the top of the test pyramid. Ooh, I have not seen that. I haven't listened to that. So yeah, do check that out. That's the call for insights, who cares for the customer. And then Katya says, I love how I can use my science background in testing. I actually never made the correlation between science and testing, but it's completely right. It's a set of experiments, really. Al says, ooh, hot take on negative tests. A negative result is as important as a positive. Yeah, so true. So true. I love the experimentation piece.
Yeah, because it's all about giving us information, isn't it? So a positive or a negative gives us information either way. So that's awesome.
But the thing is how we use this information, or how we then presented information to the developers, to the managers, to the users. Because it can be a minor issue in terms of like developer, but it can be a major issue in terms of user facing or on the company level. So, and it all depends on your on how well you do argumentation of this bug or problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Claire, where else should we go? Do we have, is there another hot take you'd like to tackle?
Let's have a look. Let's see what you prepped a load before, didn't you? Let's have a look. And do come and join us on stage if you've got your own particular hot take you'd like to discuss, people. We'd love to hear.
Oh, Adi is on stage. Adi is joining us.
Hello, my fellow humans. How are
Hello.
We all?
Hello.
Hello.
We can hear you. How are you?
Hi, not so bad. Cooking away in my office at 27 degrees, according to my clock on the wall. My office is basically at the back of the house, and it gets the sun until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'm in direct sunlight most of the time, which is why I've got a big blind, and the big blind usually helps, but it's not helping. Right, so my hot take, you probably won't like. I think the software development industry is inherently discriminatory, and I'll tell you why I think that. It's because most people have an understanding of what digital accessibility is, even if they don't have all the skills to do it. But because we know what it is, we can go out and apply it and look for it and do it. And so many places just choose not to. So we have the knowledge, we have the skills. Like most of us are quite moral people. So we have a moral imperative to include all the human beings. There's a legal compulsion. There are statutes, the things, there's a new European Accessibility Act. A lot of us are aware of the cost benefits of including everybody, because excessive designs are usually cheaper to make, they run smoother, they're easy to maintain, and they let everybody use it. And about 15% of the world's population has some form of disability. It's called the Purple Pound. It's worth trillions across the world. We have the time to add in. Like, even though a lot of people say, oh, yeah, we don't have the time to do that as well, you do it from the beginning. It's like any other thing you add. It's just part of what you do. It's not extra. It's only extra if you wait till the end and try and do it backwards. So it's this systemic, inherently systemic discrimination that's built into projects and choices, and choosing a deadline over inclusion is exclusion. So it's no different. Like, project managers, the people who make the decisions, however we do it, come up with it, it's absolutely no different from standing at a door and saying to someone in a wheelchair or somebody with a guide dog, sorry, can't come in. It's exactly the same. That's my hot take. I've thought that for a long while. And I have said versions of it in various talks and different places. But yeah, it's the thing that's bugged me the most. And thankfully, I always worked in places that took accessibility seriously and wanted, you know, to meet WCAG and make sure as many people were included as possible. So, yeah, that's my hot take. That it makes me hot when I think about it, even in the middle of winter.
Yeah. I can hear the passion there, AD. Why do you think that is? Why do you think we have to keep coming up with laws to force people to do this? You know, you're saying that we have the knowledge. We are generally moral people. Why is this still a problem?
I think it's somewhere between project managers and bean counters that they see a word as a cost. So they see security as a cost, but you've got to do security. Like, you can't not have security because nobody's hacking accessibility. People hack to get data, to get information, to get money. So the security has to be a thing that's thought about from the beginning. And then performance is a cost. And that's sometimes part of the conversation. Unless you inherently call it out. And there's like other areas as well, but the word is seen as a cost and not as a benefit. And there's definitely a cost benefit to doing it. It's so flipping annoying. And I've spoken to people at conferences who use these tired, pathetic arguments. Disabled people don't use our systems. How do you know? Do you know all your users personally? Maybe you don't have any disabled users because they can't use the system. You know, it's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? You can't say we don't have disabled users if you're discriminating against disabled users. It makes no sense to me. And it feels like it's partly an educational piece and partly an information piece. And I did a talk at a leadership thing about, and I had so many people come up to me afterwards and go, well, people have mentioned accessibility to me before, but nobody's ever explained it like that. And I went, well, that's literally, if you look into it, that's the easiest information to find. So next time someone talks about accessibility, maybe it's on you to do a bit of research about digital accessibility and the benefits of it. Like, literally now, all search engines have some form of AI in it. You get a long-winded answer about all the benefits of accessibility. It might not be fully factually correct, but it'll definitely tell you a lot of information. It might not use purple pound, but it might say, you know, you're probably losing 10% of potential revenue or 10 to 15% of potential revenue. So I think it's like an educational piece. And I have applied to more sort of leadership places where product managers and things go. And I don't get in. Well, thank you for your application, but it doesn't fit the subject matter that we're trying to communicate. And I'm going, how does it not fit to make your product better? As leaders, that's your job. So, yeah, I think it's partly educational, but partly wanting to be educated. You can't make somebody understand something. You can only give them some information and hope they act upon it. That's why I was like, I did a browser stack Breakpoint conference a couple of weeks ago. I recorded a talk for it, and Jenna Charlton introduced me as accessibility expert, and I flatly deny that I am not an expert. I've never going to have a lived experience of someone with a disability. So I'm not an expert. I'm an advocate. I just want to try and make as many people aware as possible to be an advocate. You know, I want to create advocates like who listen to me and go, that all makes sense. I want to do something about that. I'm going to go and advocate for it where I am. But yeah, I think it's that education versus like acceptance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Absolutely.
And it's so annoying. Like, I wish I could met people. I would be a very benevolent dictator in the software development world, of saying you've got to do accessibility, right? You can do everything else however you want. And I won't whip you if you try and only make it a bit better as long as you're trying. I'm not a violent person. I'll be your friendly neighborhood dictator.
Alexander, I know you put some stuff in the chat, but would you like to speak about what you shared?
Yeah, sure. So I think that the problem with the lack of accessibility in many products, it all goes to the business and to the cost of these features for the business and the importance of such features for the business. So how we can influence on it. So it's either we as a people, as a community, either as a generally people on Earth, we can ask for such features, so business will, let's say, inevitably take care of it. Or it can be laws. For example, up to some point in Europe, business may not be so much considered about keeping data, like user data, in a very good shape or protecting the user data. And after the GDPR came in, and other regulations, then a lot of businesses introduced such features. We don't know, of course, at which point, at which quality, but at least they become concerned. The same, I think, should be in terms of accessibility. If there will be hard rules, hard laws, and so that the business will take care or at least plan for such features.
Thank you, Alexander. Richard Adams raises a really interesting point in the chat around that a big challenge can be when you have a really old code base. So even if you manage to sell the idea, the scale can seem so vast. And I think this ties in with something that I was thinking about as well. So at the co-op, we have this goal that we want to be the most accessible UK supermarket. So accessibility is a really big focus for us. We have accessibility champions within the business that have built up lots of knowledge that you can go and ask. We have specific testers through this company called Fable who all have lots of different needs and lots of different tech that they use to interact with software, and we can book appointments with them so they can test our new features. So and it's the first place that I've worked where accessibility has had such focus and such investment. But I still see in my team every now and then, and not just my team, but other teams across the co-op, developers still, I feel, are a little apprehensive of saying that they have tested this thing for accessibility because they feel like then they're going to be taking on the responsibility for that, because it's a little bit like security in that you don't want to say, I've tested this thing for security, because if it's not secure, then you're going to kind of, you know, get some blame for that. So and we have a no blame culture as well. So it's really confusing to me that we have all of this investment, we have all of this knowledge, but there still seems to be a little bit of apprehension behind it when we actually come to working through features and making sure that they are accessible. And I'm going to pause there for a minute because I can see AD's come off mute.
Yeah. Well, so it's great that the court wants to be inclusion, but I've heard that about developers before, and it's like the conversation to have there is explaining to them that accessibility is not an exact science. Mm. You can make something completely accessible to one group of people, and by doing that, you might make it worse for another group of people. It's doing lots of small things to make the experience better. And the way I talk to designers about this, and in talking to designers about this, it helps the developers. When designers talk about the user journey, I talk about the other types of user journey. So what's the audio user journey? So what does it sound like to somebody with a screen reader? And I talk about equivalence, and it's like, what's the keyboard journey? So if you don't have, if you can only use a keyboard or some other assistive technology like a switch that works on keyboard inputs, what's that journey look like? And you find that the designers start thinking about that, and they adapt the designs to make it flow better for keyboard. Or think about the areas where they need to add extra context, not necessarily something you see on a screen or on your phone, but that's behind like extra instructions to give context that visually you've already got the context, but from an audio point of view, that context needs verbalizing. And you find that if you have better inputs at the beginning through the designs, then that helps the developers understand what it needs to be. But yeah, it's basically saying to people, if you improve something, there might be a chance that that makes a different group less accessible, but that shouldn't stop you improving. It's about building choices into everything you do. There's a reason why we have light mode and dark mode. And people love that, because if you go outside and your phone's on automatic and it's really bright, your phone will switch to dark mode, which is great. And then for some reason, there was a myth about it saving battery, which is like ridiculous. But anyway, but basically I say to people, like, I've asked this question loads of times, what's best for accessibility, light mode or dark mode? And generally speaking, 70 to 80% of audiences and people say, oh, it's got to be dark mode because light mode came first. Well, technically, no, dark mode did. It just had green text on the screen. But they say, oh, dark mode, because that was added on. And I'm going, well, no, it's 50-50, because about 47% of people in 2019 in the UK had some form of astigmatism, which means having a dark mode made it easier for them people to see the screen, whether they're wearing glasses or not. So some people prefer light, some people prefer dark. I'm a context me. I have some systems on my, some things on my phone are set on dark mode because I find it more comfortable to use it in dark mode. Some are in light mode. And my computer, if I'm working on an evening, automatically goes to dark mode, you know, when at a certain point. So it's one of these where it's, there are so many individuals, there are so many human beings. There's no one size fits all in terms of accessibility, but you can make it as broadly available as possible by making small improvements. That's why I like posting easy accessibility tests that every tester should know. That's why I've told people how to solve 90% of accessibility problems by fixing the top six things. So what it is, how to test for it, how to fix it. It's literally there. So like the top six things to text, the how to fix the top six things, literally share that with all the developers. You can. Them to read it, and when they're going, oh, I'm not sure about it. I'm not sure, it might be too hard. I don't want to do something wrong. Like, do these things. Like, literally, the answer is there for you. Like, and that will make things a lot better. Like just simple things like contrast and only having one H1 and logical orders and stuff. Like, these are the dead simple things that are easy to do. They're not complicated. They're not out of your realms. You don't have to go on a course. It's literally the answers there. So I don't think there's a quick fix. I think it's one of these where you just have to keep having conversations. And the higher up you can have the conversation so that person is spreading the message, the better.
That's awesome. Thank you, Aidan.
Gary Hawkes has just put it very nicely. To make accessibility a priority, it needs to be a business objective.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it works because we have the leadership buy-in for us.
Yeah.
That creates the time and the resources that we need to be able to invest in it properly.
Yeah, when I worked in business intelligence, when I was a business intelligence manager, I was basically put in charge of quality and improving quality. And I basically, to get buy-in from the head of business intelligence, I put together a presentation that tied quality to all the business objectives.
Mm.
I managed to tie that together. And I did a similar thing with accessibility. I tried accessibility and it said, oh, we want to be leading. And I'm going, well, actually, by being accessible, you potentially gaining 10 to 15% extra customers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that can be your edge over your competitors and stuff like that. Not that I want an edge over competitors for accessibility, I want everybody to have it. But that was the way I sold the message then.
Mm.
Have conversations, be an advocate.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, AD, as always. I can add a little bit more to that conversation, but I'm just looking at the time. So I'm just going to see if anybody else wants to join us and give us their hot take. But otherwise, I'm sure we could talk for hours on this stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, get me started on accessibility.
Well, I think that goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning, where it's like, you know, not done is better than good, or even good is better than perfection. You know, like if that's the norm, or if you can create that norm in your work culture when it comes to accessibility, where it's like, well, we can't do all the things, but we can't do this. And then achieving some successes, celebrating those, and then being able to build on that. And then I think, you know, Ada, you mentioned that they consider, or it's accessibility is considered a cost. And so, you know, as we're advocates for accessibility, like being very careful about the words we use and how we tell the story of accessibility, and how inclusion is a moneymaker. Because I know I've gone to some sites, and if I can't use it within the first few minutes, I'm out. You know, I just don't go back. And so you won't hear about clients that have issues if it's just hard to use.
A lovely loop back to what we started the conversation with. That's great. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't see anyone else joining us, so I can talk a little bit more about an accessibility working group that we set up recently, which is now, we're now starting to see some of the fruits of our labor there. So we put this together just within my team. So we've got a couple of developers, the user researcher and a designer, who have joined this working group because every now and then in our retrospectives, we were realizing that we weren't putting as much focus in it as we would like to. So we wanted to dig into why that is. So we've talked about things like developer confidence in testing for accessibility and lots of other bits and pieces. But what we're seeing now is that by having this kind of check-in every couple of weeks, it's giving those developers the chance to say, this is what I'm working on at the minute, and this is what I've tested. And we can all sort of collaborate on ideas of what else we could be looking at. And for some reason, it's created a really lovely little safe forum where the developers are actually talking about this stuff now. And it feels really difficult to create those spaces sometimes, because if I put on a workshop about accessibility or testing for something else, all I get is just a screen of cameras off. But for some reason, in this working group, something that we're trying to continue with every couple of weeks, it's working, and we can see that that's happening. So that's something that I'm having some real success with now, which is amazing.
That sounds so nice. And I, listening to you, I kind of hear this spirit of like experimentation, where it's like, oh, I've tried this thing and I really like it, and these are the results. And I think that's really important because, well, I mean, you know, there is such a culture of speed now, and speed with results, where it's like, oh, we got this, you know, we have this project, we're going to get it done as fast as possible. But are we still having fun? are we able to have fun? Do we have time to think about things and experiment? And yeah, I don't know. Do you feel like people are able to do that in the workshops?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Bye, Adi. Thanks for joining. Yeah, because otherwise, what are we doing this for? You know, it's not all about the grind. You know, let's take a step back, remember what we're doing this for, our customers, our users, whatever. But also, you know, what are we doing this job for? To make the world a better place. I think that's what we're testers would put on this earth for, making the world a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. I did see a hot take, which, Alexander, we still have a few minutes if you want to roll with it. There was a bit of AI chat.
No, I refuse.
I said no.
This is such a waste topic that we can't cover it in the 4 minutes. And there are a lot of things.
That's the right answer, just, Alexander, thank you.
Just relax and just have fun with all of the amount of code that AI generates every day. And we as testers, we will have fun. Maybe not so fun, but some kind of testing fun.
I think with all this code that's being generated, we're going to need the snacks for it. So, yeah, I'm going to need more food.
Yeah.
That's my hot take.
Hopefully not generated food.
No, not generated. Oh, yeah. I know we didn't get to touch on it, which it's totally fine. There's so many things we could talk about, but yeah, I think I'm not seeing spaces where people can grieve, which is, this may be a bit of a downer, so everyone can log off if you feel like it. But I think people are sad. I think the jobs are changing and the markets are changing, and the amount of layoffs, which I really just need to stay offline more, because things are just shifting so fast. And it's like, where are our places to grieve? Like my job's changing, the developer's job's changing. I don't know. That's my hot take in the last 3 minutes we have is, maybe we need to just take the time to be sad for what we're losing, because we are losing things. We're losing a lot. So I know for me, just taking a few minutes of quiet every day is just like helpful. But yeah, you don't stay sad forever, but honoring that sadness, because your body's telling you something. So listening to it is key.
Absolutely.
Also, yeah. I hope you can't hear Princess snoring.
Is she snoring?
Yes. Like,
brilliant. Rosie commented in the chat, is Princess snoring in the background? We can hear it. Lovely. It's like a little purr. It's
brilliant. My God. Yeah. No matter how sad we are in this house, Princess always manages to lighten it up. Can't get too sad.
That's beautiful.
That's her guardianship coming out. Alexander, I did see you go off mute for a second. Did you have anything?
Yeah, so I just wanted to propose maybe we can have a special channel in the MOT Slack where it will be a safe place for everybody to say that, yeah, we want to be sad and to that we said about something that AI has taken from us something or change it the way how we work, because this kind of reflection often helps just to think about it and just to tell about it and to see that it is not only for you in your mind or in your experience, but it is shared across the industry.
Yeah, that was actually brought up in the Solve Problems, it was Into the Motiverse, Solve Problems That Matter with Amy Phillips. And yeah, she pointed it out. She was like, engineers are, they need to grieve. Like some are really sad that part of their job isn't writing code anymore. And yeah, I like that idea. We'll see what's possible. So, well, Claire, it is time.
It's been a pleasure, as always.
So wonderful. Alexander, 80, thank you for joining us on stage. So many hot takes. I didn't even get to Oasis or Blur. I learned about that hot take last night. So if you are an Oasis or Blur fan, would love to hear it. But otherwise, yeah, this has been great. And Claire or Alexander, any final words before we log off?
Just remember about accessibility.
Yes. Make it normal. Claire?
Oasis. That was my final word. I'm out.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much. It's been a joy.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Happy Friday. Bye.